Welcome to On Mission, a podcast from the Catholic Apostle Center. Today we are joined by Father Frank, Chris, Kate, and special guest John Sidko, and we are discussing Advent.
I'm a big fan of the season of Advent. I think that, and not just simply because that means we can put up Christmas decorations. I think that sometimes when Advent starts to come around, people are thinking, oh, all right, now I can get the Christmas decorations out from the attic, the basement, the closet, wherever it is, and start to put these things out. But there's a lot of different things that are associated with Advent itself as a season, but also a number of symbols and customs. And as at our Catholic Apostolate Center website, there's a whole set of Advent resources. And we found that one of our most popular pages, not just on the Advent resources, but just in general on our site, are the symbols and customs of Advent. And so we have with us as our guest, John Sidko, the Assistant Director of Programs for the Catholic Apostolate Center, who put together our Advent resources and really did a deep dive and research into all this, and particularly this particular page of symbols and customs of Advent. So welcome, John. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
So what was behind some of the reason why the center put together these Advent resources and particularly this page on symbols and customs as well as history?
So a bit of background, almost 5 years ago now, I was brought on full time. And one of the questions that when I started was looking at resources in the church at large, as well as on our own center website of resources, which already had a lot at the time, of these questions of, well, what are things that are assumed but missing that can help with that sort of evangelization effort? And one of the things that I looked at in particular was this question of, there's a lot of stuff on Christmas, understanding the history of Christmas, understanding the symbolism behind certain Christmas items, but there isn't as much around the history and some of the customs around Advent. You know, things like, why do we have the Advent wreath, for instance? What is the symbolism behind the candles? What is the purpose behind those sorts of elements? And so with the help of a variety of staff members, including Father Frank, I took a good amount of time researching and looking up a variety of these customs to understand that there is a deep sort of symbolism and a deep sort of understanding of our Christian faith through these symbols of Advent.
Kate, do you do the Advent wreath in your home? Is that something that you've taken on as a custom in your family?
Yeah, definitely. We actually have a parish day where we do a lot of these different Advent activities, and one of the things that they have is making your own Advent wreath as a family, and they have a bunch of different actual live, like, garlands and evergreens and the different berries, and you put them all together and the kids get involved, and that's made the Advent wreath even more special for us because we're making it anew each year as a family.
So what is all that about, some of those things? You know, Kate mentioned a few of those things, the evergreens, the candles. What's all that about, John?
So, I mean, with the wreath itself, it's evergreen, which is an older tradition, medieval in terms of its history. But the green is to symbolize everlasting life. A big thing with Advent, with a lot of the symbols, with a lot of the customs, is this duality between the preparation or the commemoration of Christ's birth, you know, that of, you know, 2,000 years ago, but also that preparation for the upcoming end times. And so there's this question of eternity. There's also this question of hope that happens throughout a lot of the symbols of Advent. When you look at, for example, you know, the traditional Advent wreath has four candles on it, three that are purple, one that is pink or can be rose. Symbol of the 4 weeks, traditional 4 weeks of Advent. Purple being, you know, the piece of penance that we look at also during Lent, this penitential sort of waiting, patience, and that sort of thing. And then on the third Sunday of Advent, we light the pink candle, which is or rose, depending on what kind of wreath you use. But it's to celebrate the joyful Gaudete Sunday, which is that sort of joyful piece. In my family,
and it also means that Christmas is almost here.
True. In my family, we would also have a fifth candle, which we would have in the middle, which would be a white candle to symbolize when Christmas actually came, to symbolize the light of Christ. That's also pretty popular in a lot of places and a lot of churches I used to grow up in.
Now, there are ways of trying to count down the time in the season of Advent, and there's the
idea of a calendar, perhaps.
Yeah, even Lego.
I was
going to
say,
there's even a beer one at Costco this year.
Advent calendar has really taken on a life of its own outside of the Christian tradition.
Yes.
Which is fascinating. Mm-hmm. One of the things you see, there's a ton of things that traditionally have come from the Christian tradition that have been somewhat secularized, right? And I think the Advent calendar is one of them. And the fact that they're actually calling it the Advent calendar, too, I think is really interesting. Like, they haven't stripped away the word.
It's like the Easter Bunny.
Right. It's a fascinating thing. But, John, do you tell us more about the actual Christian origins of the...
Well, it's actually designed more back in the day, back in more medieval period. It was a lot more ornate. It was made with wood and these sorts of things. There isn't actually like a well-known history of like when did it start per se, but it's one of those things, much like the Advent wreath, it's some point in that, you know, early second millennium, maybe around the, you know, 10th and 12th centuries, where there was a tradition of giving out gifts or cookie or goods or whatever for children to symbolize the waiting for Christmas. And usually it would end on December 24th. In my family, for instance, we had a Mickey Mouse one that was similar like that. And, you know, the idea is that, you know, you start on December 1st and you go to December 24th. It's changed what's in those, you know, Advent calendars and what they're made of. Some of them are pretty simple. Some of them are very ornate. But it's this idea to serve as sort of a visual representation of the upcoming waiting of Christmas. There isn't a ton of true Christology, you know, in that sense of it. But there is also this understanding of the waiting for Christ. You know, that is the key element of any sort of Advent calendar, besides the, you know, ornaments and gifts,
candy, Lego. Yeah. Wine.
There are a couple. Of course, you know, during this period, people will put up a Christmas tree, but there are a couple other types of trees that go with this Advent season. One's the Jesse tree, and another is not so much a liturgical thing, neither of them really are, but they've kind of come into customs. In a number of parishes, there's this thing that they call the giving tree, which is off of a little children's storybook. But, John, where did these two things, what are they coming out of? I mean, one is very recent, right, historically. The other has a...
Well, the Jesse tree, which is the first one you were talking about, is probably... That one's a fairly old tradition.
Mm-hmm. I seem to remember doing it in school.
Yeah.
Sort of children-oriented.
It's not even so much children oriented. It's just one of our, of any of the stuff we talk about besides maybe the Advent wreath, this is probably one of the oldest traditions we do. And it really is based its roots in Matthew chapter 1, the genealogy of Jesus.
Oh, I love reading that. That's fun. The faster you can read it without tripping over the names, the better.
All the names.
Yeah. And so a Jesse tree is. It can be very ornate. It can be made of paper. You know, it could be a literal tree, but it's this tracing of the roots basically between Abraham and Jesus. And it uses all of the names basically that fall through that genealogy. And, you know, they use different symbols and different ornaments and different sort of ideas. I think, like, for instance, David is David with a crown, Noah with a boat. Abraham has certain ones, but they all have sort of this idea of a visual representation of the, like, the kingly genealogy of Jesus. And it also serves as like a reminder of the Old Testament. I know we're probably going to talk a little bit later on about the O-Antiphons as being a similar sort of Christmas or Advent tradition to talk about the connection between the old and the new, the past and the future. And the Jesse tree serves as like the very literal sort of representation of that Old Testament. The giving tree is a very sort of new idea. And like in my home parish, this was a very popular thing because it sort of talked about I guess the best way I could describe it is it sort of baptized some of the the reason for the season type of stuff, or like the nature of being like charitable and giving during the holidays. And it's pretty literal to what it sounds like. You develop sort of gifts to give to those who are needy, to sort of exemplify the sort of charitable acts that we're supposed to exemplify during that period.
I think I've seen it as like, you go pick up an angel off the tree and it has a number on it, and that's the number of the year of how old of the child that you should buy the gift for. And if it's pink, it's a girl, blue, it's a boy. Or sometimes it's like actual items that are mm-hmm. needed for a food pantry or for, for a homeless shelter.
Yeah, socks and right. different gloves.
It's definitely something that I think is very prevalent nowadays, but yeah. mm-hmm. certainly has its roots in...
Well, I mean, any sort of charitable act has its root in right. Christian tradition, hopefully. And so on the resource page that we'll probably link back to, hopefully... I put in there that it links directly back into Matthew 25:40, what you do to the least of these, you do unto me. Mm-hmm. And it's best to understand the giving tree as sort of a very practical and real exemplification of that mm-hmm. that idea.
Which goes to that point that you made a little earlier about the aspect of Advent of it being about the end of time. Mm-hmm. And toward the end of ordinary time, and when you get to the a feast of our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the universe, you have that Matthew 25 figures pretty prominently in the liturgy. And then those first couple weeks of Advent mm-hmm. are about really focused on that. Toward the end of Advent, then there's another symbol that often comes out, and it's one that my mother collects. Mm-hmm. She collects nativity scenes. It's which becomes kind of massive. I think she has like 140
wow.
or more nativity scenes, full blown scenes.
Wow.
Some of them are just the Holy Family. Some of them are these amazing kinds of made of all sorts of materials, all sorts of cultural groups, and really a fascinating thing. When I was at St. Jude Shrine in Baltimore, we would display them. There for people to sing, and she would go on a traveling show, but usually they're in her house, and we've joked as a family that we'll open a nativity scene museum, years from now.
It's a popular thing I've seen to have these even the custom of showing the different nativity scenes from different cultures
yes.
from around the world.
Mm-hmm. That's so beautiful.
So your mother was ahead of the time.
Yes, mm-hmm. really. So where does that come from, John?
So that one's actually fairly unlike some of these other traditions and customs. This one we know exactly who it was, and that was St. Francis of Assisi. That was a thing he did in Italy,
and it was live.
Yes. Yeah, that one was literally made with the straw and all that mm-hmm. type of stuff in
What's
the 13th.
It called? The creche?
Creche.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And he developed it as, in this, pretty fits well with Assisi style, it was used as to emphasize the humility of the Savior of the world, coming as a poor child in a poor manger.
In the incarnation, yeah.
We already talked about some of the stuff that they can be very ornate. They don't necessarily have to look like St. Francis of Assisi necessarily made them in the 13th century. And one thing of note, actually, that was fun to research was some people use a variation on the nativity scene or the creche. Like, for instance, in my house, in a lot of places I knew and grew up with, they would just have the whole scene laid out. Some people like to emphasize that the waiting element and have the manger empty.
Mm-hmm.
With the baby Jesus until Christmas Eve.
I was just going to say, my mother does not put out the baby Jesus figurine until Christmas. Mm-hmm. Everyone else is there.
Right.
Sometimes
mm-hmm.
the wise men don't make an appearance until Epiphany. But yes, my mother very adamant that the baby does not go in the manger until Christmas.
And Advent takes a turn after the 16th of December. The 17th to the 23rd is a deeper preparation for Advent. It's a very important liturgical time within the church. There's these antiphons that are associated with Vespers or evening prayer. And they start on the 17th and run through the the 23rd, and that's by Vespers or evening prayer from the Liturgy of the Hours, the Church's prayer. So that you have O Sapientia, meaning O Wisdom, or O Adonai, O Lord or Ruler, O Radix, O Root of Jesse, O Clavis, O Key of David, O Oriens, O Radiant Dawn, Rex Gentium, O King of the Nations, and O Emmanuel, God with us, O God with us. And those all have scriptural connections to scripture in the prophet Isaiah. But this period really is a deep portion of Advent liturgically that prepares us to go into that the celebration of Christmas. Most especially, so the first coming that you were mentioning. When we look at this, John, in terms of all this preparation, what would you say would be one of the key things that we should take away in terms of how Advent, we can celebrate Advent?
I mean, this is just me speaking from, you know, my life and experience. I grew up in a town that very much prided itself on its Christmas elements. It was Christmas City, USA.
Yeah,
Bethlehem.
Oh, yes.
Some people would have their Christmas card sent
yep,
from there. So.
Yep.
And
really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a thing.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, because it'll say Bethlehem, Christmas City, USA, right on the stamp. It's
learn
very popular.
Something new every day on this podcast.
Yep. I think a big piece and a big takeaway is understanding that a lot of our symbols and a lot of the things we take for granted. I mean, we didn't talk about, for instance, the Christmas tree or the ornaments or any, like, we talked about the nativity and all these sorts of things. To understand it, that the Advent season is a twofold season, that it is both a preparation of the past, an acknowledgement of the past in the sense that Christ had come and, you know, died for us eventually, but had been born as a child. The fulfillment of the Old Testament, you know, in the old antiphons, they specifically are that piece of fulfilling the prophet Isaiah's statements of who the Messiah would be, as well as, you know, I think the most important thing is to recognize the other element of Advent. It's not only just the commemoration of the past, but acknowledging that Christ will be coming again. That's like a key piece of a lot of the symbolism and a lot of the cultural elements of Advent is to understand that that Christ will come again. And as Catholics, that is a very important thing that these weeks of Advent are supposed to serve and remind us of, that it's a waiting for us not only of the Christ to have come and acknowledged the past, but that Christ will come again in the end times, not in a like a very apocalyptic way, but in a very hopeful way in that same sense.
We actually got a nativity scene for as a wedding gift, and that was actually one of our favorite wedding gifts. It was just so thoughtful and something that, as a newly married couple, we would have never like thought to purchase or request.
I also got one too.
I think that's a lovely idea, and we actually got married in the Advent season, which isn't very typical, on December 19th. And so for our honeymoon, we were still in Advent, and we went to Rome. And each church there has their own creche.
Oh, the Presepe, yes.
Incredible. And so we would go from like church to church and just look at all of these different iterations of, you know, of the baby Jesus being born, as you said earlier, in these incredibly humble conditions. And something that they did there is they really emphasize like the chaos with which in which he was born. Like the point is to make it difficult to find the baby Jesus within just daily life, especially since at the time you know, everyone was there for the census. And so they're having just all of these normal things. And you're like, where do we find Christ in all of this? And so that was just a really beautiful thing for us to do as a couple, a newlywed couple.
I was just looking up more information about the Christmas stamp. But that actually brings up a really interesting topic that just kind of thought of was Advent being this time of preparation and often sending those Christmas cards too. I think the Advent is a good time for us as Catholics to engage in conversation about our faith. And I think the resource pages that John, with the help of many others that put together, serve as a good resource for folks that are looking for a way to dive a little deeper into the more superficial aspects of the season.
Well, and I think the other thing, part of the reason you brought up a good thing that I wanted to mention about sort of the Advent resources is a lot of times, the Advent season gets lumped in with the Christmas season in the larger secular world, and even though Advent wreaths and Advent calendars are used a lot, there tends to be a forgetfulness of that sort of period of reflection and that period of waiting. I mean, there's a very strong intentionality that 3 of the 4 weeks of Advent are purple, symbolizing the similar motifs and similar ideas that Lent would serve. And I think a big important thing that I realized and, a lot of the staff had realized over the years with the Advent resources is it serves as a good reminder to take a break and understand that this is a period of reflection and a period of prayer. The OA Antiphon serve is a very tangible way of doing that, but the entire season should serve as sort of that prayer and reflection of, especially because as we as Catholics acknowledge Advent as the beginning of a new year. It's not the end of the year as Christmas would fall on the calendar. Yeah, it's the beginning of a liturgical year. And so acknowledging that as, well, here are the new beginnings and here's what I need to reflect on, I think is an important thing as well.
Well, thank you, John, for being with us to talk about the symbols and customs of Advent and some background on Advent. I think it's been a wonderful conversation. It really gives us something to prepare ourselves for Adventus, the coming. And so as we bring this podcast to a close, Chris will tell us how you can find us.
You can certainly find us online on our website at catholicapostolatecenter.org. Follow us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We'll be sharing lots of great posts and content during the Advent season, into the Christmas season, and then, of course, well into ordinary time throughout the year, of course. Be sure to share this podcast with your friends and your family, especially if maybe a cousin is a little curious about what something may be. You can just send them this podcast. And of course, be sure to leave us a 5-star review or a like on your podcatcher of choice.
And may the charity of Christ urge us on.